Good morning. Welcome to Family Life. Your host, Salima Muhammad and Dr. Nadia Muhammad. This program is sponsored by UAFS, the excellent NYC. Dr. Muhammad will join us in December, where we discuss public health issues. This year, we all have come on in the name of Allah, the Most Gracious, the Most Merciful. I greet the listening audience in the peace of Assalamu alaikum. This week, we have an honored and special guest, Jacqueline Smith. Jacqueline Smith was born in Chicago and has lived in Las Vegas for over 40 years. She has two adult children and began her boxing career working as a coach with her son, an amateur boxer, for 10 years. She was introduced to Mawad Muhammad by the late Roshan Well. After meeting Mawad, she just knew she had to work with him, and she has for the past 20-plus years. Specializing in computer technology, she brought the global online platforms to M&M Sports. Jacqueline, welcome.
Assalamu alaikum, Salima. How are you today?
Well, alaikum assalam. I am honored. I am wonderful. I'm elated and excited that you are here among us today. You are a woman in a man's world.
Yes, absolutely.
And I am delighted to have you here. Let's begin with our question. You've worked in the capacity of assistant to one of the greatest and youngest promoters of all time, Mawad Muhammad. What has that been like for you?
It has been extraordinary. I am absolutely thankful and grateful because there are not a lot, you can probably count them on your fingers, of women who get to the level that Mawad allows the women that he employs to get through. There's no way, I have no doubt, that I would have been putting on shows, acting in a promoter's seat under anybody else. But before I even met Mawad, before I knew him, that was his way of doing business. I came to learn that, you know, he always hired women, intelligent women, beautiful women that were assets to his company. He allows you to go, and he teaches you. You know, I had a love for boxing coming from the amateurs, but even before the amateurs, boxing has always been with me. I grew up with five brothers, so it was always sports in the house. It wasn't girly things in the house. And I always played sports with my brothers. I watched sports with my brothers. So it was something that I loved beforehand. And after moving to Las Vegas and being able to see it live, I'm from Chicago, being able to see it live on a weekly basis was the most exciting thing to me. Working for Mawad, like I said, has just been a treat because he allows you to grow. You have responsibility. You're not just a face. Like I said, every woman that I've ever met that's worked for him has been very bright, very intelligent, knows this business because he'll teach you. That's the thing. That's what makes it more than just a job that you go into. Mawad is constantly teaching, constantly showing. I can give you an example. We had a fight with Oscar De La Hoya in California. And Maraj said, I'm going to need you to go over to California in my suit until I get there this weekend for the fight. You know, I just need you to sit in for a couple of things. And I said, okay, because I wasn't anticipating that I was going to have to do anything, and I'm just sitting in, so it'll be fine. But it was a little more than that, because I was actually involved in putting this show together and making sure the fighters were getting everything they need. And I had the promoter calling me, and I'm like, oh, my goodness, I wasn't prepared for this. But everything that came up, I just handled, and I would call them a lot, and I'd say, hey, they asked me this, and they asked me that, and this is what I said, and that's what I said, and, you know, when are you coming in? This is getting kind of crazy. And he's, I'll be in, don't worry. And this went on for like 2 days. And finally, the day of the fight, that Saturday morning, and we had got it all together, absolutely no hiccups, but this was absolutely my first time of acting, like I said, in his speed and making sure that everything is together. So when he came in that Saturday, I ran, you know, and I was like, oh, my gosh, you know, this is so crazy. And what? I ended up co-promoting the show. And why did you do this? You know, and I'm just rattled, you know. And he looks at me in his calm demeanor and says, because I knew you could handle this. And that was the end of it. So, I mean, what could I say? You know, that was the end of it. And like I said, everything went along fine. And I, you know, I was looking for some grant. Oh, well, this happened or that happened, you know, that made, you know, and made me delay getting here. But no, it was just calm and cool. And you can handle it. And I said, oh, okay. So that's working for Maraj. He will absolutely put you out there. He will absolutely put you out there. He will, you know, just the things that he's opened you up to. If you're willing to learn, to really learn, he's absolutely going to teach you. So working with him has just been a joy of my life, and I express to him often, because I believe in giving people their flowers. There are quite a few of he has taught. Marion Muhammad, for one, who went on to become the president of the IBF for many, many years. And the gratitude is there, because not only would no one have given a woman that stance, and nobody has stance. But we're black women. You know, boxing is a sport that's dominated, much like other sports, by white males and people with money. And it's like the old boys club. But when you're working with Maraj, he's going to put you out there. You're going to be respected. Because that means everything to him, how you carry yourself, remembering that you are representing his company. So you want to do the best, absolute best for him. So there is a gratitude and a thankfulness that I will always have for him, because I would not have seen the things I've seen, learned the things I've known, been the places that I've been without him giving me a chance that I didn't even know that I was looking for. I was working with this fighter, Roshan Wells, and the next thing I know, you know, I meet Maraj Muhammad, and it takes off from there. But working with him, it's just been a wonderful learning, extraordinary experience that this little girl from Chicago had, so it's been great.
How wonderful. Thank you for that commentary. And yes, I've met that Milad Muhammad. Oh, how beautifully put. You came from amateur boxing, got in your son to the sport. How did that come into fruition?
Again, I had always been around boxing since moving to Las Vegas. I think boxing is one of the sports that a parent should definitely let their child familiar with, participate in. It is a wonderful sport of discipline, knowledge, patience. Again, discipline is always at the top of my list, because not only are you learning self-defense and how to defend yourself, but the discipline it takes, you know, to be able to do that, to get up and run in the morning, to make sure, because so much is on the fighter. It's not an individual sport, a team sport. I mean, it's not a team sport. It's an individual sport. So there's not the team coming to get you to run. There's not the team coming to do this. It's so much that you have to do yourself. You have to get up in the morning and run. You have to make sure that you're maintaining the diet that you're supposed to be on. And my son would like to fight in school. And they would call me, and I'd leave work and come give him a talk or two. And he would, for a minute, was one of those kids that if you said something to him, and, yo, mama, this or this, and, you know, he was ready to fight. And you know, no matter how much I told him, people will say what they want to say. And he kept on. So I finally had it and said, I'm going to put you in the gym. My best friend was a boxing trainer. I said, okay, I'm going to put you in the gym. And what I expected was going to happen was he was going to go into the gym, he was going to get in the ring with these little tough kids that had been boxing since they were 5 years old, and they'll knock him upside the head a couple times, and he'll realize that he's not the toughest guy in the world, and we'll go on from it. And that's not what happened. He got in, he started to compete, he fell in love with it, and went through the amateur programs all the way up into the Olympic trials, and eventually turned pro. Once the amateurs is such an exhausting within itself. It was like the last couple of years, because I was in the amateurs as a coach for 10 years, and I remember the last 2 years was just, oh, my gosh, I'll be so glad when this is over, you know, because it's such a difference working in the amateurs and working in the pros, which you can do. And a lot of politics with those kids, which used to break my heart. So I became an advocate for those amateur kids that you know, weren't getting a shot. The politics, he wants to represent us. So when this kid comes along and surprises the world, he may not be as popular, may as he is known. He won't get the decision, and that is just wrong. I would fight for these kids, and that was my passion. But I was so glad to get out of it. And when my son decided that he was going to turn pro after the Olympic trial, that was when I went full time into the pros. But I had actually done some work with Don King. Again, like I was saying, my best friend Charles Schubert has a brother, Horace Schubert, who was the number one contender in the world at welterweight. So I had been working for them. I didn't want my son to go into boxing. Like, oh, no, this is going to be terrible. But I was already working there. And so when he decided, but, Ma, this is what I really, really want to do, I said, okay, we got to do it then, 100%. You're going to do it. We're going to do it right and do it all the way. So that was my transition from the amateurs into the pros.
Outstanding. you stated Roshai Wells introduced you to Marat Muhammad. How did that come about?
Again, I met Roshai Wells in the amateurs. He was a fighter, an excellent fighter. And I met he and his father traveling. And that's another good thing about the amateurs. After you reach the age of teenager, you begin to travel. I never had to worry about drugs or my son being out in the street because his drug testing regular. He was focused on his running. And I was right there with him. So that's what I mean by that discipline. There's hard work. When kids come to me now and say, I want to do something in boxing, I tell them this because it takes a commitment that a lot of people find out, you know, just a little ways in that they can't feel that commitment, that discipline that it takes to do that. So I met Roshai Wells and his dad during amateur competitions all around the country. And I actually talked to them whenever I would see them. And after the Olympics, because Roshai went to the Olympics, and after the Olympics, his family moved to Las Vegas. I was in the gym. And at that time, he had already signed with someone, but the promoter was giving him problems, and he was trying to get contract, which was a horrible contract, and I'm also a paralegal. So he had asked me if I could help him look at his contract, and it was a terrible, terrible contract. And then he starts telling me about Marat. Well, at this time, I had never heard about Marat. He was saying, I want to get out of this contract, and there's this promoter I know, and he's great. He's great, and his name is Marat Muhammad, and if I can get out of this contract, I'd like to go with him. But I wasn't thinking about Marat. Like I said, I was thinking of how to help this kid get out of this horrible contract. Well, he's like, fine, okay, you know, we'll talk about him later. Let me look over his contract and see what's going on. And I ran into, I forget exactly what it was, but it was something in the contract, and I called him up and I told him, I said, I'm having a little problem with this part, you know, because you can actually take your promoter if he's not fulfilling his part of the deal, getting your fight and doing what he's supposed to do, you could take him to arbitration or the court to get out of your contract. And so I had a little problem, and I said, I'm having a problem here, but it's okay. I'll talk to some people here and find out what we need to do about this. And he said, you know, I can call Marat now, and you can ask him a question about it because I'm sure that he knows. And so he connected us. Anyway, I had never spoken to Marat. He connected us on the freeway, and we started talking. And, you know, he said, I'd like to help this kid, but I can't get involved because it would be what they call in legal terms fortress and spirit, which is as a promoter working for a promotional company, you can't advise someone that they should be with you. You can't talk to what, and I hate to say it like this, but it's what it is. You can't talk to someone else's property. You can't, if you're under contract with someone else, I can't hold a conversation and telling you, hey, you need to leave this guy and come over here with me or offer you money or anything like that. Just that conversation to get your promoter's license to be full, then you'll be in court. So the conversation went on, and Mirai said, okay, well, I can tell you, you know, about this situation, which is what he did. And we went about it, and it worked. And Roshai got out of his contract, and I thought that was going to be it. And I thought Roshai was going to go and sign with Murad, and that was going to be the end of the day over, and I can go on back to my life. Well, Roshai took another path and was going through, you know, talking to other promoters, and this, and I said, I don't know what's going on, you know. So I said, let me talk to Murad again and find out what's happening, because I don't want to get involved. I, at that time, I wasn't trying to get involved in the boxing business on that level. I was focused on my son and the kids that we had here, because for the first time ever in Nevada history, we had someone going to the Olympic trials representing Nevada. It had never happened. And that year, we had four kids that I was working with who went all the way to the trials. So I had thought I was going to get back to that. But these little problems kept coming up, and I would talk to Murad. And finally, he was like, oh, I'm coming to Vegas. And we can sit down and, you know, we can talk about what's going on. And at this time, he still doesn't even know that I have a son. That it just never, it came up, and, you know, I wasn't thinking about putting my son with somebody right away. And so we're going to work totally on what's happening with Roshai. Well, when he came to Vegas, what I didn't know, he was coming to Vegas because some years before ended his boxing license, and he was going to be reinstated for the Roy Jones Jr. fight. So I was downtown at the newly built athletic mission waiting for him to come in, but not really knowing what to expect, and I'm waiting. And I stand up and I see getting out of the car this group of black men. It's one Caucasian man with them, and I mean, they are clean. From head to toe, them brothers are clean. They got the fedoras, they got the long overcoats on me, and they are stepping. Now, I've been in Las Vegas at that point for 20 years, and I had never seen this site before. You know, a group of black men, briefcases, suited and booted, as we say. And I said, wow. And I said to myself in that moment, if this is this man, I'm working with him. I'm working with him. It was just power and thought and just in their walk, you knew that these people were somebody. And I said, yeah, I'm going to work for that man. I said, hey, you know, if you're fighting here and you need some help, I'd love to learn. You know, I'm in. I knew in that moment, you know, that I was in. And told him what I did. You know, I did computers. Like I said, he didn't have the knowledge. Nobody did of the computer world. And I said, well, let me show you. He says, now this can really open up the globe all around the world. Just doing a story or interview. People all around the world hear that. So that was the beginning of meeting Murad Muhammad and how I came to be.
Yes, ma'am. And you explained to us the type of boss he was, he just threw you with, which is just absolutely brilliant. Before my next question, this program is sponsored by New Africa Excellent Murad Peace. Were you aware of his strong beliefs in Arizona?
Always. I had not had that wide experience with Al-Islam or with Muslims in particular, except for another one of my best friends who happened to be my sister-in-law at the time. She was Muslim. And I had just adored her. I loved her. We were best friends. And we talked and find out we had so much in common, because even regretfully so, within my family, who had never had experience with Muslims, you know, they were kind of, she's a Muslim, you know, that under your breath thing. And I'm not like that at all. I don't care who you are. If you treat me right, I should do right. You know, it doesn't matter. And so I had went home from Vegas and met her, and we became friends and buddies after then. And that had been my only experience. I had never read a Quran, didn't know any of the tenets about Al-Islam. But like I said, I'm open to anything. But the thing about Murad is, while he is this religious man and firmly believes what he believes and doubled down on it and is respectful and just, it's so much more than being a gentleman. You feel his connection to Allah. Yes. We could be in the middle of a multi-million-dollar boxing deal, trying to pray. Murad was going to pray. Everything stopped because Murad is going to pray. The activities that surround the fight, the parties, the women, he never participated in any of that. You could always find Murad in his hotel room. If he wasn't in his hotel room, he was with his wife eating. So you weren't going to find him gallivanting all over, you know, and being the big-time promoter. It wasn't important for him to be seen all over. It was all about the fighters. And like I said, his respect for women, just, I had never seen that before. Because like I said, if you want to learn, really want to learn, he would teach you. And I would ask him, how are you like this? You work around beautiful women all the time. It seems that you incorporate women intentionally into your business. You know, what? And he would say, Allah. He would say, my God.
Yes, yes.
You know, this isn't, you know, it's not hard for me because I believe in God. And one of the other things, as I knew he was to Al-Islam, and I would go to him for advice. Not once in the 30 years that I've known him did he ever try to proselyte me. Did he ever try to convert me? I could call him and say, I'm going through this and that, and we would pray, you know, but not one time was it ever, oh, you need to get away from Christianity, you need to come into Al-Islam, this is where black people, it was never, never like that. It was because he respects other religions. His is number one in his life. He is a walking manifestation of what it is to be faithful, to believe what you believe, to know what you know like you know it. That is Allah. So while it was ever present there, like I said, you knew it. People said he wasn't trying to convert. He talked to you about anything you want to talk to. But like I said, when it's time to pray, he's going to pray. And do what he has to do. So, yeah, I wasn't aware But I became aware with working with him that it just, you know, it sounds faint to say, you know, his religion, because it's so much more than just his religion. Like I said, he's a walking manifestation of what it is. He is the words that he says. He believes with all his heart. And he's there. It doesn't make a difference. I was a Christian. I came as a Seventh Adventist Christian. And he's never, like I said, he never tried to convert me. He never downplayed my religion. I would say, oh, well, you know, Saturday is my day. Okay, do your day and worship and call me after sundown. I never felt small around him. That he felt love from the Lord, and you feel that love in working with him. Not that you're just a part of a team, but that actually somebody is really caring for you. They're caring for your well-being. They want to know if you're okay. Murad can come to me still today if we're having a conversation. I say, are you a little off today? I'm not getting my jacqueline. You're a little off today. What's going on with you? And listen, and what I love about him is he doesn't have to demean or talk down somebody else to build up what he's doing. He's all inclusive of everyone. Like I said, if you want to learn and you're the righteous type of person, because he's not going to entertain any type of crookedness or, hey, we can do this style deal and do this. Because in boxing, you even have promoters that sell their own tickets, sell their own seats. And the Lord's just not that guy. And there's a lot of temptation there. And still, Murad is just God. Who he is, if you see him at the mosque, is whatever relationship you see have with him and he reveals that to you, that is exactly who he is in the boxing. And I think that's one of the reasons that he's been so successful in the boxing world, is because he just is who he is. That name, Muhammad, means something to him. He wouldn't, the bottom of the ring and what you have on the bottom of that ring, people can sell that because it's being seen on the TV, you know, how you see the advertisers on the ring pads and on the ropes and the promoter's name. Well, Murad, like I said, that's thousands of dollars depending upon the fight, even, you know, millions of dollars. But he would never let them put Muhammad on the bottom of that ring because he said, that's not a name that you walk over. That, you know, that's not going to happen. And he never did that. So he took, in his everyday life, if you see him praying, if you see him talking, that's who he is on the outside of boxing, is exactly who he is on the inside. He brings a righteousness. He brings a belief. He brings caring. It's not just what his mouth is saying. It's his actions as well.
Thank you so much.
He brought Alice Love head in front and never shied away who he was. Like I said, he wears Alice Love like he does his clothes. It's present. It's there. And he caught a lot of flack for it, for that name. And he said that's okay. I'm not, because I would ask him, how do you put up with this? And you know it's just the Muslim thing. And he was asking, going and simply, are these people God? Second? And I'd say no. And he said, well, there it is. God, I believe in God. God has control of this. God has control of everything, and it's going to be fine. And it's always was in his whole career. He's never danced with himself. He's never taken someone else. It's no matter what it is, always worked through it. And I think it's because he always stayed true to himself and who he was.
Yes, ma'am. In fact, Murad Muhammad became an imam in the Islamic religion and gave recently a khutbah in the nation's capital, Masjid Muhammad in Washington, D.C., this very month, which was heard in over 137 foreign countries on U.S. military bases. So your synopsis of his commitment, again, is showing on a daily basis. Thank you so much. What type of working relationship did Murad have with the major networks and cable corporations?
Murad has been wonderful, excellent, had a wonderful relationship with all the networks, CBS, ABC, NBC, Showtime, and HBO up until they dissolved their Boston program. As a matter of fact, Murad did the first HBO boxing show. He brought boxing to HBO with the prison fight in Rahway State Prison back in the 70s. Now, that was before my time, but oh my gosh, I've heard that story so much because I was a teenager then, but I was actually watching those fights, and again, not knowing that this is Murad Muhammad, but I was actually watching those fights from inside of Wally State, and that's how HBO boxing program began with him and James Stutz. I believe the reason that he's had such a stellar relationship with all of these networks is because he delivers, plain and simple. There is example. Murad and I, the whole team was out, and Murad and I were at the MGM here, and we were waiting for a banner to come in. Well, the banner came in that you hang over the ring that was supposed to have Eminem Sports on it that the whole world can see on television. Well, the banner came in, and it was too large, and it wouldn't fit, and it looked, but we have to have that banner. Well, and it's crazy. People are panicking, oh, what are we going to do about this? So they call, and they tell us about the banner, and Murad says, okay, we got to get it working. We got to get a banner up here. We got to find somebody local. And we have to have this banner printed this day. So, and I'm like, how in the world is he going to pull this off? Because we got to have this in a couple of hours. You know, so, you know, this evening, it's like 12. By the time this show goes on fire, it's got to be a banner with Eminem Sports, Murad Muhammad, because they came me up there. So he was calm and cool, you know, upset that they hadn't done their job, but he was calm and cool. And I was like, oh, picture what it was. And he said, calm down, guys. You got to get a banner. I need to call in. And needless to say, he got the banner and put it up. Nobody knows what it's getting at. That banner and finding somebody legit to do it, and the price that he paid that wasn't a part, you know, of the promotion. We just have to get this banner. That's been his reputation of consistency throughout boxing. Whatever it is, there's, like I said earlier, he's never canceled a show after putting on over 1,000 fights. There's never been a cancellation, but there have been guys who have walked out and said, I'm not going to fight, and somebody else, you got to get somebody else, and they come back and see that the world does go on without them. Okay, I'm going to fight. So, you know what I think it's just consistency that the show must go on. It doesn't make a difference if he was working on a Roy Jones Jr. $20 million promotion or the Friday night fights that he used to do at Madison Square Garden. He brings that same energy, that same commitment, that same we're going to get it done. And many, many times it's been at his own expense, but you will never know that. You know, you'll have television, executives freaking out. Oh, how is this going to be done? Oh, this didn't happen. Oh, we need this to go. And again, in his calm demeanor, and I've been around him just watching things implode, still in this calm demeanor, he's going to figure it out. He's going to get to it. And like I said, even at his own expense, one of his expressions to me, again, because he can work on a multi-million dollar promotion or it could be Friday night fights at Madison Square Garden, he's putting in that same type of effort. And I said to him, it doesn't matter what you're doing. He has a way of making these fighters feel like they are just as important as Roy Jones. They are just as important as Manny Pacquiao. He put on these fights and these guys would want to do it all over again just from the electricity that he brings. And I said, you know, a lot of people when they do their low-level fights, you know, it's not so much. You know, but you bring that same energy. And he said to me, because the fighters deserve that same energy, Jackson, if the show is not ready to go to Hollywood, why are we doing the show? So if he would go out of his way to make these fighters feel, and it was true, that you're on the way to Hollywood. This is the big time now. It didn't matter if you were a 4-round, 6-round, 8-round, 12-round. It didn't matter. He treated them all the same, and that show, that promotion of the show in the eyes of the viewer was going to be flawless. Like I said, many times he'd take the hit where he'd lose money. You'd never hear him say a word about it. He'll probably say, oh, why did you tell people that? But it's the absolute truth in his modesty. He will take the hit to make sure that everybody else is covered. So that's what I think is his reason for being successful and maintaining his relationship with these networks is absolutely his consistency. If you get Murad Muhammad, you get Murad Muhammad. If he's going to take you on, then he's giving it all he's got. And he's not going to quit. You don't quit before he quits. Because when problems come up, he's going to say, okay, we need to do this. He's not going to dwell on that problem. He's going to dwell on fixing it. And I found that that's another thing that makes our personalities click, because that's how I am. If a problem comes up, we've got to fix it. We can deal with the, oh, I don't know what happened and woe is me after the fact. But right now, we have to fix this problem and worry about whatever. And he, like I said, he takes that into everything he does. If it goes wrong, and I have to tell this story too. While I'm saying that, Murad invited me to a function that he was giving in New Jersey. It was an award ceremony, I believe, for the Muslim Journal. And Murad was just supposed to be one of the people that was speaking. Florence, New Jersey, and it is a list of celebrities and sports and acting, all of this, coming in, and this is going to be great. Well, it just so happened that during that weekend, after I got in, New Jersey had one of the worst snowstorms that they ever had in New Jersey history. All the airports are closed, and no one can fly in. So that means these people aren't going to be here to get their awards. There's nobody that's going to be speaking. There's nobody that, you know, there's going to be nobody. So we've got, you know, all the people that have bought their tickets to this event that live in Jersey and nearby that can drive are going to come, but none of the celebrities, none of the speeches, none of any of that is happening. There's no other presenters. There's no nothing. And everybody is freaking out and saying, what are we going to do? And Mirage says, I got it. You know, if the people aren't going to show, it's nothing you can do. It's a snowstorm. So I've got it. I'm telling you, for a moment. Murad emceed the show, announced who had won for what, gave his little anecdotes like an MC would, and you never missed a thing.
It
went, you know how everybody is doing these award shows virtually now?
Yes.
And I would have to say Murad was before his time on that one, because that is exactly what it looked like. He stood up there at that podium. He was charming. He was entertaining. He announced who had won for what. And for 2 to 3 hours, he did that entire event, and it was wonderful. You would have thought that that's the way that it was planned. It was wonderful. And again, that's Mirage. Going to work. If a problem comes up, we don't have time to freak out. We've got to fix this. We've got to do something else. And that's what I think the network love about working with him, that they can come with any problem, any hiccup, and Murad is going to say, okay, don't worry about it. We'll get it fixed. So,
exactly.
Yeah,
Murad had over 1,000 sites. Never had one cancellation. You mentioned that repeatedly.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about his technique and sellout at major arenas like Madison Square Garden, New York City, Conestoga Fieldhouse in Indiana, MGM, Grand Las Vegas. And at this point, I want to think more about what you brought in that transpired the boxing world into an online world, if you would please.
Okay. When I came to Murad, which I found was amazing, but what's even more amazing is to me, because I met him the fall of 96 going into 90, and they were not in that office. They were not using the computer, you know, using the computer to do contracts, to type up things, but into the online world, the internet world. And I found that he hadn't known about the boxing websites and doing interviews over the phone for these websites. They weren't grasping that. They were old school. And they had been doing it old school, and it had been working very, very well, I'd have to say. That's what I say. They were so amazing that they weren't doing any of this sooner. Well, again, I went to school for computer science, and that's a big part of what I do. So when I met him and we started talking, and I said, you know, he was doing fights. And I said, you know, it would be much, much bigger if you went online. And I started breaking down to him about what going online meant and him becoming more visible and his fights becoming more visible and not just being seen by fight fans here in the city where the fight is or around the country. When we say internet, we're talking about a global audience, opening up your business and what you do to a global audience. And he said, okay, let me see. So it took a while to grasp. Once I sat down with him, I said, look, you got to sit down with me, and I'm going to teach you this, because this doesn't make any sense. I believe it was for Floyd Jones Super Fight, Floyd Jones Jr. versus Eric Harding in the New Orleans Arena in New Orleans. And it was a budding website called FightNews.com. And I contacted them and said, hey, how would you like exclusivity to this fight? You'll get all the press. You'll do all our press. You'll get the interviews. Anytime we're talking, you're in the room. Well, they couldn't believe this because at the time, no one was doing it. No one was. The web people kind of were brushing off the boxing websites as, yeah, that's something the kids are doing on the computer. And I said, no. This is what's going to come. This is the evolution of technology. So they said, oh my gosh, of course we'll come and bring this guy. So I flew in the managing editor and his wife into New Orleans. He had press conferences exclusively. Everything that pertained to that fight, Fight News had it, and they were putting it up. And like I said, this was the first time that had ever been done in boxing where a boxing promoter had utilized a website to put out all their information. And it was a huge success. And so, and that's another thing that Mirage does not get credit for, but he was actually the first one to do that, to actually buy a website in, to give them exclusivity, to print, to do everything that we needed to do to promote that site. And I had just wanted to show him that example. I said, show me this, just give me this one time to show you what I'm talking about, and you'll see, because I knew the return was going to be great. And it blew. We were in New Orleans, and it was a flood. It was the most depressing thing, because we had did all this promotion, we've done everything, and it's like nobody's going to show up. Well, our lives great. Because right before that fight, we went out. I went out just to look around, and it was full to the rafters. People came in the rain and the storm, and it took off from there. It took off from there. People showed up all of a sudden. Now, his office was being inundated with calls from websites, and he says, Jacqueline, these people are calling me, and I don't even know what they're talking about. WWE, this and this, and then you guys go to work. And I said,
Wow, that's
I got to love, and that was it. It opened him up to the world, and he's been there ever since. He still get communications from fighters saying, hey, when are you coming back? I know about you from my dad. And it just opened him up to that global level, and that was it. I was in and said, I got to put you to work, and that was it.
He had 50 world champs, 80 world contenders. Can you name a few of them?
Oh, wow, let's see. I know in the 70s we're talking about Razor Ruddock, and I believe that Razor Ruddock and Mike Tyson fought twice. $100 million fight. He was the promoter that actually came, fought Manny Pacquiao when no other promoter wanted to touch Pacquiao because Pacquiao had been knocked out. Murad was the one that said, okay, kid, let's go. If you want to do that, to start at Pacquiao. Roy Jones Jr., Evander Holyfield, Javier Castillo, Johnny Tapia. I mean, during those years when he was so active, there's not a fighter that didn't want to come to Murad because Murad got them paid. You had fighters that maybe had patent made $1 million. But when they came with Murad, Murad gave them that first $1 million and they were in. They were in. So, yeah, it worked with Muhammad Ali. I mean, it's just international, all over, just international promoter.
Jackie, compare heavyweight boxers of old to modern-day fighters, heavyweight fighters.
Oh, boy. Well, I think one of the problems, and I don't like is when they took the 15 rounds away. I think we should still have 15 rounds. Those championship rounds mean a lot. And just like with anything or a lot of things, when money comes into play, you know, Muhammad Ali, Joe Frazier, they were making nowhere near the money that these kids are making today. Before Roy came to Murad, I think Roy might have been making $1 million or $3 million, something like that. I'm not sure. Murad got him $10 million, $20
million,
you know. So I think when money comes in, Ali, Frazier and them, these guys were born champions, were fighters. They fought because they loved it, because you had to be the best man. The best man had to beat the best man. It was they wanted to fight each other. You know, I want to be labeled as the best. These kids now just want to get paid. You know, it's all about the money.
It's an interesting point you're making. So that same discipline, that same commitment, that same love of the art.
Absolutely.
Is missing.
Absolutely. You know, you have fighters that back then that absolutely loved what they did. They wanted to fight the top guys. You saw these great fights because they wanted to fight each other. To be the best, you have to beat the best. So they wanted to fight each other. And right now, not only in heavyweight, but in all the divisions, it's all about, I want this money. You know, I want it. And I don't want to have to work hard to do the money. I want the money. I want the celebrity. But I don't necessarily want the hard work that goes into that. And you'll see heavyweight fights now with guys showing up with the big guts and all of that. And back in the days of Frazier's and Foreman's, and all, that just wasn't going to be. They showed up in excellent
degree. They did not happen.
Yes, right. I think it's the dedication to the sport. And then, again, like I said, I think it's the money grab. I still have fighters that call me and say, I'm thinking about doing this, and I need to make some money to do this. And I said, well, boxing's not the sport you go into. If you're just trying to make the money, boxing is not the sport you do. It's a dangerous sport. And like I said, it takes so much commitment, so much discipline, and before it gets better, it'll get worse. So to me, the only reason to go into boxing is because you love the sport, you're good at it, and of course, if you're getting paid a flag away, a decent salary, that's a good thing. But I think the level of commitment to it changed when now you have guys making $100 million and all of this stuff. And not saying that they don't deserve it, but then the fight turns out not to be a good fight because the dedication isn't there. It's not about what it was in the old days of truly, truly being the best and fighting the best. You know, we've got fighters now where they don't even want to fight each other, you know. They avoiding each other and all of this. And back in the day, they just fought. They wanted it. If Marvin Hagler wanted to fight, Chivalry said, I got to fight him. You know, if when Ali fought Foreman, they said, Foreman's going to kill you. You know, are you kidding me? I'm going to be the best. That's the man I got to be. So I think that changed. I think the dedication and what it really, really means to be a fighter, that changed. I think now more people are looking for the celebrity of the sport rather than the actual sport itself.
You mentioned, let me point one something here. You mentioned the 15-round bout versus today's exhibition. But let me just say this. Was not there a price that was paid by Muhammad Ali?
Absolutely.
Ken Norton. You mentioned it's a dangerous sport. Is there a balance somewhat with regard to injury by having less rounds?
I guess that's why I love the sport, because too, it is so much in there, natural, you know, it's your natural talent. It's your desire. It's you. It's not a team sport. There's nobody in here with you. You know, this is a one-on-one thing. And if you're not training, if you're not, like I said, a lot of guys now get a big head and you can't tell them nothing. Then they end up getting hurt in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these injured people every year around the world, fighters die in boxing rings. It's unfortunate. Referees have to do better at stops when you see a guy consistently getting fumbled in the head. So referees 100% have to do better on that aspect. And you have to learn how to fight. When Deontay, I'll give you an example. Deontay Wilder fought Tyson Fury. He got hurt. And he's never been hurt like that before. And he didn't know what to do. He didn't. So that has something to say of training. And that's what I mean when I say when a kid comes to me and tells me that he wants to box, but it's only for money. He's like, you know, it's not a lifelong dream. It's not something I always wanted to do. I just need to make money. I always tell them, you need to get a job. You need to do something else, because people get doing a sport. And being a fighter advocate, I'm always fighting for what's right for the fighters. Being an advocate, I would rather tell you to go away and not do this. Don't pursue this. This is not for you. Then to say, okay, well, let's just try it and make this money. I'm going to get paid, so we'll just. No, no, no. You, as a promoter, like Mirage, as a promoter, you have to care about the fighters because fighters get hurt. Fighters lose their lives. So you have to be able to say, no, this isn't for you, or you're not ready for this fight. And sometimes they don't understand those things, but you're doing it for their best will for them. They may not understand it, and they may get upset, but this is real. You're taking punches to the head. You're taking punches to the body. You know, a lot of people leave the state. They're punchy when what it really is the CTE, the same thing that happens in football, you know. So you have to be careful. And I think Murat's always been careful and always been able to say a guy might not want to hear it at first, but this is, you know, this isn't for you. You know, I don't want you to get hurt. You're no good. You know, we have Gerald McKellen, who was hurt inside the ring, who's now blind, you know. So, and fighters that die of dementia. And to me, that's irritating to me because that hasn't been discussed enough in that CTE conversation. They leave boxing out of that. And I get
so keen. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I get angry because of that. And I say, why don't they have boxers? At least in football, they have a helmet. Boxers are taking blows to the head constant, 30 minutes. This is like somebody pummeling you inside your head for 30 minutes, but they don't put them in that study. So, yeah, and I think Murat has always taken that 100%. I've been in the room with him when he told somebody, you're going to get your son killed, or this isn't for you, or you shouldn't fight anymore. He's not going to go for the money grab and risk somebody getting hurt. If he doesn't think you can do it, whether you're signed with him or whether you're the opponent, he's not going to put you in that fight.
And I think that's so impeccable of his business sense, a consummate business person. You incorporate that. You know, Ali, did the fighters of old approach boxing scientifically? And the George Foreman fight with Ali and Zaire, when Ali manifested the rope-a-dope process. He knew if Foreman landed a punch, he was in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So scientifically, he approached it, the fight specifically, and the sound fighting to tire him out. And
right.
I don't know if that thought process is a part of today's fighters.
Right, and unfortunately, over the years, like I said, a lot of guys aren't thinking about that. Thinking inside the ring is an absolute must.
Yes.
You have to be able to think for yourself. You have to be able to make adjustments inside of that ring. And because your corner's not there, they're only going back. You're only going back to that corner after 3 minutes. Somebody's doing something, and you're constantly getting hit. You inside that ring have to figure out, well, I got to lift my right hand a little more. I got to cover my guard here. I got to, you know, lift his hand up a little higher to block these shots because he's hitting me. An example is Roy Jones Jr. when he fought Joe Calzaghe. Calzaghe was hitting him with uppercuts. I'm sorry, Roy was hitting him with uppercuts, uppercutting him to death, which would have led, assuming if he kept on hitting him like that, to a knockout. But what he did was start clasping his elbows together so that that uppercut couldn't get in. And every time Roy would come in there, he put those elbows together and had his hands up right there at his face. So that took away that uppercut. And that's thinking in the ring. That's what you do when you're really trying to learn this sport. You really love this sport. And you decide this is what I want to do, and I'm going to be the best at what I do. Floyd Mayweather was another one that was great at making adjustments inside of the ring while the fight is going on. I have to be able to change my situation, or I'm going to get hurt. I'm going to get knocked out.
Yeah, yeah. It is recorded that Mirab has been published in every newspaper and library in this country, also known in 200 foreign countries, including Israel. How was he able to accomplish that? Just a few of the measures you think worked.
I think Mirab is known all over the world and been published so much that he fights all over the world. He has been in every country, Africa, he's been in the Philippines, he's been everywhere in his world travel. And by opening him up to the internet, people were able to see him and recognize him on site and know, oh, okay, that's Mirab Mohammed. But he's traveled extensively around the world and fought in these major cities and countries. So I think that's why he's published all over the world, because he's been all over the world, literally.
Yes, he's known. How was he instrumental in launching the Jordan brand with the light of night?
Now, that was before my time when he was actually doing the negotiating. But the same fight that I bought up, the Roy Jones Jr. and Eric Harding, is when he had bought Michael Jordan in. I know at that time that Michael Jordan, and he still does, they bring in athletes to represent the Jordan brand. And at that time, they were bringing Roy in. So Michael Jordan was also down at the fight in New Orleans and bought Roy into the Jordan brand, which, again, more money to the fighter. Didn't bring more money to Mirab. It was for the fighter. And that was Jordan's first time coming into the boxing world and signing an athlete. That had never been done before.
Outstanding. I understand that Bob Seger, the former CEO of Disney, called him last month to talk about old times. How did he accomplish this particular function?
You know, I am not, again, his personal relationship with people, when I find out about the people that he knows. I've never met Bob Iger, but I know very well who he is. I know Mirab has a relationship with him. Also with Jerry Jones of the Dallas Cowboys. Jerry Jones would send his private plane to Mirab up and bring him to listen to see the game. And again, I think that is because Mirab is just going to get it done. Mirab is introduced, bringing fights into these stadiums. You have these 60,000 seat arenas, and nobody was putting boxing matches in there. And here is Mirab. He comes and he's saying we can feel every seat in this arena and getting it done. So that's why I think that he, it doesn't surprise me that he knows people like Bob Iger and Jerry Jones and the heads of the MGM, the president of the MGM. And it's none of that surprises me that he knows those people, because it is his consist doing whatever he does, you know, whether he's promoting a music show or a boxing match, it's going to be excellent. It's going to be professional. And it's going to fill the seat. So, again, I think those people reach out to him because of his consistency and him being known as a moneymaker. If you have an arena, a stadium, and you're interested in having fights there, Marat is the person that you need to talk to about that, because he knows those people directly. He doesn't have to get on the phone and call this person or that person to get to this person. He doesn't need to call Jerry Jones' assistant to Jerry Jones. He calls Jerry Jones. You know, he doesn't have to call all these other people. So I think it's accomplished because of his consistency in what he's done. And he's just known as a moneymaker. Marat can call a meeting with anybody, and they're going to go because of who he is. And they know that it's going to be a lucrative deal for everybody involved. So, yeah, I think people are waiting to do business with him.
Thank you so much for joining us, Jackie. And
absolutely, it was my pleasure.
Before we close, it has been so wonderful speaking with you and knowing this boxing world. What does the future hold for you? What do you have exciting going on? Please share that with our listening audience before we leave. And if there's a way for them to contact you on social media, if you have that type of contact, if you would share that with our listening audience before we leave today.
I think that boxing, just like everything else, is going through it right now because it's COVID-19. Fighters are fighting with no fans, but as Marat says, the fight has to go on. I think we're in a good place. I think that Al Haymon, who has a lot of the top fighters, the majority of the top fighters out there, I think that he's putting on this fight. Where you see champion, he's definitely out here doing the best job now in lieu of Marat, of getting us the best fights, because we went through probably a 10-year span of not seeing the best fights. You know, Mayweather and Pacquiao didn't happen until 7-8 years after they were both in their prime, you know. Mm-hmm. So I understand what Al Haymon is trying to do by producing these good fights and having champions fight each other. And I think boxing is always going to be boxing. You know, when the UFC came out, they said, oh, that's going to kill boxing. Boxing is dead. You can't kill boxing. There's always. Boxing has been around since the Greek days. Forever. I mean, there's talk of boxing in the Bible, you know, these men fighting against the wind. So it's not going anywhere. It's not going anywhere. I would like to see boxing become more of a fair space for fighters, where you see that Al Haymon fighters say that they're getting paid the money, they're getting the exposure that they need. So I think that I would like to see more inclusion with the fighters, which is a throwback to Marat where the promoters actually care about the money that they're putting in the fighters, what they're worth. But like I said, I'm biased. I'm an advocate for the fighters. But I think we're headed in the right direction, but I don't think it's going anywhere. I think we've seen the worst of it because I still run into people that say that they don't watch boxing. Oh, it's all fake. It's this, it's that. I think it's headed in the right comeback direction. I don't know. Murad says sometimes he's coming back. I'd love to see him come back because I know that when or if he comes back, he's going to come back in a big way. And it'll be righteous. It'll be good. It's time fighters start getting what they deserve of their future, because once they're done fighting, that's it. And they're still relatively young. A fighter's career is over at 35, 40. Well, at 35 or 40, you know, regular people are just making their strides in whatever their career is. They're just, you know, getting on track to what it is they're going to do. But with boxing, it's over. So I would like to see things more geared to the fighter, like Mirage is doing. Teaching them what to do with their money, what to invest in, when to save, and to always be taking care of your family and making sure that they're okay. So I think that's the direction that you need to be going in. And right now, Boston is moving in a positive direction, and so it'll be interesting. I'm interested to see what happens. Sometimes I get frustrated and I call Murad and say, man, when are you coming back? You know, you need to come back. You know, like I said, if he does, I'm sure it'll be big. He's definitely missed in the sport. And, again, Murad has a way of promoting that is comparable to none. Nowadays, they want the fighters to promote themselves through their own social media. It's not the big extravaganza. Murad, it will have you promoting on your social media if that's what you choose to do. But he's the essence of the world promoter. He has you on newspapers. He has you on television. He has you doing the morning talk shows, radio shows. So he covers every aspect of media than just nowadays how they tell the fighter, go promote yourself. I think we're moving in a good direction, but I still don't think it's enough of concern about the fighter. You know, and how he's going to walk away from this. The promoters now are concerned about that fight, not what happens to you, what happens to your family if this doesn't work or you're injured or you can't do that. Because the ones that make everybody's not a superstar. For every person that you see on TV, there's probably 100 that didn't make. So I'd like to see it definitely move in the direction of like football and basketball, where now because these guys were going broke, they now teach them financial literacy and what to do with their money so that doesn't happen. And I would actually like to see that going on in boxing where there is true concern for the boxing and what happens to him. And my social media, you can find me very easily, just Jacqueline Smith. Facebook, Instagram, I'm out there.
Outstanding. Thank you. It has been not only a treat, Jacqueline, but a blessing to have you on the show today. We thank you. We thank you. And we want you to come back. This program
thank
is
you.
Clear. You're welcome. This program is sponsored by New Africa Excellent, Milan Foods. Thank you. For joining us today, you may reach me, Salima Muhammad at SalimaSAO, IMAH, MOH77 at gmail.com. www.thefamilylife.com. I greet the listening audience and Jacqueline. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.